Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLachlan. Jay McLachlan is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLachlan and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLachlan stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLachlan's local and loyal programming, host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLachlan's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern, and the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLachlan, and so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLachlan is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20, capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital ZIBBY20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white, open, long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLachlan. Thanks so much.
Hi, this is Zibby Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. I'm also the host of Moms Don't Have Time to Lose Weight, and I'm the editor of the anthology, which you should run out and buy, called Moms Don't Have Time To, a quarantine anthology. All proceeds of that book go to COVID-19 vaccine research. And I'm the editor-in-chief of Moms Don't Have Time To Write, a new publication on Medium, and we're accepting submissions, so please send your personal essays there. And if all that isn't enough, you can follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens, and my website is zibbyowens.com. Okay, now back to this amazing podcast. Simon Rich is the author of New Teeth, Stories. He has written for Saturday Night Live, Pixar, and The Simpsons. He is the creator and showrunner of Man Seeking Woman on FXX, Miracle Worker on TBS, which he based on his books. He's also a frequent contributor to The New Yorker. Welcome, Simon. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books.
Thanks so much for having me. Great to be here.
I really loved your short story collection, and at times I laughed out loud. And when I read the New York Times review of your book, and I was like, I felt the same way. That was so funny. I laughed out loud. So it is really, it's
so nice of you.
Really nice when a book can make you do that after a long day. So thank you for that.
Thanks for saying that. I really appreciate it.
So tell me about how this book sort of came to be. Why did you start writing these stories? How did you pick the ones you included in the collection? You know, all that good stuff.
Well, I really was trying to write about my kids. I have two kids. I have a 4-year-old and a 7-month-old. And it was really kind of out of sympathy towards what they're going through that a lot of these stories originated. Like, there's a story in the book called The Big Nap, kind of hard-boiled noir detective story. And the detective happens to be a 2-year-old baby.
Which is hilarious.
And he is trying to make sense of a world that he can only partially understand. And he is visited by this very mysterious other baby, an 11-month-old girl, who we, the reader, know is his baby sister. But he has, you know, he's not really sure about that yet. and she wants him to find her missing unicorn. And he doesn't really trust her because there's sort of this mysterious backstory. Like, some people say that she came from the hospital. There's also rumors that she once lived inside of mommy's tummy, and he just doesn't really know where, you know, who to trust. And a story like that, it's really just comes from a place of me sympathizing with just how baffling and confusing the world can feel to young kids. I, as a full grown adult, feel baffled and confused most of the time, especially in the last couple of years. So I can't even imagine how strange and frightening and overwhelming the world can sometimes feel to little kids.
It's almost like you've taken Boss Baby, you know, and like turned it on its head, right? Like with the voice being so developed from the point of view.
Yeah, well, Boss Baby, he knows what's what.
That's true.
My baby protagonist is in way over his head. He is barely keeping it together. You know, he's hitting the bottle every day.
I know.
He's just, you know, he's constantly waking up in strange places and doesn't know how he got there. You know, he's barely hanging on.
It's so great to turn it all on its head, right? So much writing and literature and, you know, just so much of our brain power is about how the parents feel, like how we are, like, don't know what we're doing, or we're upset by this, or we're trying to manage this, or this is the advice we need. But it's to put the, like, point of view from the child is, I mean, it's just great. Like, I mean, it is. None of it makes sense. Like, it is crazy.
Oh, it's so baffling. Yeah, I mean, I was on a plane once, my daughter, and somebody handed her some crayons, you know, a flight attendant. And I was teaching her please and thank you. So I said, you know, what do you say? And she said, she remembered thank you. And the flight attendant said, you're welcome. And then my daughter turned to another random person and said, now, what do you say? when does this arbitrary chain of of meaningless statements end? How long do we continue this script? And so they're really just trying to pull it all together. And it's hard not to sympathize with what they're going through.
Oh my God. My littlest guy is 6. I have 4 kids. And we were talking about cells. I made the misguided thing of, he was like, mommy, are you gonna have more kids? And I was like, no, I had my uterus taken out. And everyone's like, oh, mom, why'd you say that? And I'm like, sorry. Anyway, so then it comes into this whole thing about, like, cells and this and that. And he was like, you have jail cells in your body? And I'm like, no, cells. But, like, for a brief moment, like, maybe that's what it was. Maybe I had tiny little jail cells all over me. Like, who knows?
I mean, that would be, I think, pretty cool to have jail cells in your body.
Right? I mean, you could take that for your next story if you.
I would just claim that. Yeah. I would just say, hey, be careful. I'll lock you up in here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's amazing. So tell me about how becoming a dad has kind of shifted, aside from the fact that now, like, your perspective is, you know, from a 2-foot-tall man instead of a, you know, however tall you are. I don't know.
Yeah.
How has it changed your writing in general? Like, did you notice it, like, right away? Were you like, oh, you know, now I have to, like, pivot to this? Or I don't know. Has it changed, like, your perspective on, maybe that's too random?
I think it has in like subtle ways. I don't know how much it's changed, like, my style as a writer, because I still tend to write pretty unusual stories that are mostly about robots and pirates and talking animals and things like that. And I've been doing that since I started out. But I think my stories have gotten a little bit more hopeful and redemptive and positive. I just, like, the world can seem like a really, like, dark place, especially when you're looking at it from, like, a parent's vantage point and you're thinking about all the danger that's out there. And I just kind of, with my stories, want to add a bit of brightness to it if I can. I pretty much will scrap a story if I think that there's no way for it to have a happy ending. Whereas in previous short story collections, I'd be like, yeah, you know, the world's like that sometimes. So we'll just roll the dice and leave this one in. And with this collection, New Teeth, I really only included stories that I thought ended up in a somewhat redemptive place, even though often they start off, you know, in a complete nightmare scenario.
It's funny. I had dinner with a friend last night and I was talking about something that, like, some situation I wasn't happy that my kids had to go through or something like that. And she was like, well, but that's good because, like, real life, there are so many bad situations, right? Like, you can make your home into this, you know, I don't know, cocoon of perfection or whatever, where you're, like, intellectually stimulating your kids and entertaining them and everything's okay. But they're going to go out in the world and meet people who are terrible. So you might as well just, like, have them experience it when you can be there to be like, oh yeah, that's an example of like a terrible thing that can happen. But
you know. Totally. Yeah. And it's, and you have to somehow teach your children to be able to cope with reality as painful as reality can be. There's a story in New Teeth called Everyday Parenting Tips, which is this parenting how-to. And it's, how do you help your child if your child is afraid of monsters? And over the course of this how-to, you gradually realize that it takes place in the midst of a monster apocalypse where monsters are everywhere and completely real and absolutely after your child. And your child has every reason to be rationally afraid of monsters. And that was sort of my attempt to kind of figure out a metaphor for dealing with like what society is going through right now. You know, how do you teach your kid to be resilient, you know, as opposed to just lie to them and say, yeah, everything's fine. You know, because sometimes the monsters are actually real. The threat is real. And if you tell your kid, oh yeah, no, I looked under your bed, there's no monsters. They'll know you're lying if there are.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, there are no monsters. And yet if you move this like 2-inch piece of fabric from your mouth, you could, you know, be stuck in your room for 2 whole weeks. Like, what?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. So it's, but you know, we're learning, my wife and I are learning bit by bit how to feel completely baffled most of the time. And that's what a lot of the stories are about too, is like frightened, confused children, but also like frightened and confused parents. Like one of the most personal stories is about these two pirates, Captain Blackbones the Wicked and his first mate, Rotten Pete the Scoundrel. And they are these ruthless, murderous pirates with peg legs and eye patches and the whole deal. And they find this 4-year-old stowaway girl on the ship, and they just have to kind of figure out how to co-parent her, which is much harder than any treasure quest they've ever been on.
Yeah, pretty much harder than anything. Might as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, forget the pot of gold. It's like, just keep the ship going for a few days with the 4-year-old.
Exactly.
Running
back, you know? Right. Yeah, totally.
Abort mission. So Simon, tell me about how you got into writing to begin with. And like, did you always know you were a writer? Like, how did this whole thing start for you? And
I really did. And in fact, I'm in my office right now. I have this thing. Let me show this to you. My mother framed this for me for a birthday because I made it when I was 5 and you probably
barely. Oh my gosh.
What I want to be when I grow up.
When I grow up, I want to be a writer of kids. Wait, it's on the thing.
Kids books. It's sort of backwards. But it says, I think this is what it says. I had really terrible handwriting and still do. I have slow, fine motor skill development. So I couldn't hold a pencil right until I was like 12.
It could go right to the iPhone.
Yeah. It says, when I grew up, I want to be a writer of kids books. I want to write kids books because you could write anything in kids books. And then I go on to say, maybe I'll get the idea from other books. So I'm already actively trying to plagiarize.
Yeah, good for you.
And then I mentioned my favorite writer, Roald Dahl, which is spelled R-O-L-D-O-L-L. Roald Dahl.
It's a tricky name. You know, it's not an intuitive spelling. You know, it's okay.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, nothing's really changed since I was 5 years old. I mean, I think that even though my books are aimed at adults, there's still something kind of like, hopefully a little Roald Dahl-esque about them. And there's still a kind of like surrealism and absurdity that I shoot for, even though it's like sometimes dealing with more adult themes.
I am like 65 pages into Matilda. I've been reading a page or two every night with the kids.
Yeah.
Although the illustrations are propelling us farther along, so I feel more accomplished. But yeah, yeah. We're like, and I'm like, wow, he was like, this is odd. This is totally odd, but like, I'm loving every minute. I mean, I saw the play a while ago, but
Matilda and the Witches were probably my 2 favorite growing up. And I just thought just such perfect metaphors in both cases for the indignities of being a kid, you know, and the witches really gets at the way that kids often feel, which is that there is this grown-up conspiracy keeping you from living your best life.
Totally.
And then Matilda, I mean, what a great wish fulfillment fantasy, the notion that you could somehow have agency and power in a world that is constantly trying to get you to be quiet and sit still. So I loved those books and still do. And yeah, he's still probably my favorite writer.
Wow. Yeah. My kids are like, oh, mom, you must love this because you love books so much, just like her. And I was like, yes, that's it.
Yeah. I also, I loved having a protagonist who loved books as much as I did. That was really exciting to see.
So who, like, what types of stuff do you read now?
I read a lot. Well, so I love short stories, you know, so a lot of my favorite writers are novelists, but like I like their stories more. So like T.C. Boyle mm-hmm. is an example, or like older writers like Shirley Jackson. I like a lot of writers who write like genre fiction, short stories, and other genres. Obviously, somebody like Bradbury or Stephen King is a huge influence on my writing. People are always surprised when I bring up somebody like, you know, like Richard Matheson or horror writers, but I've always just really liked short stories that take big swings. Whether they're funny or not doesn't really matter to me. I you know, as long as there's like an alien spaceship landing on page two or a monster coming forth from another dimension, I'm like totally on board. And if it's funny, that's great too. But like a lot of my favorite short story writers are more like premise writers. And I like the adult stories of Roald Dahl a lot too, which are very strange and absurd.
I haven't read that.
Sometimes funny and sometimes just kind of creepy. Mm-hmm. A lot of my favorite writers wrote like the short stories that like Twilight Zone episodes are based on. Like Bixby is another one. But yeah, I read across all genres.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards?
Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As kids get older, some things about parenting can get easier. I mean, not many, but some. But others don't, like having conversations about money. Point is, kids won't really know how to manage their money unless they're actually in charge of it, and that is where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. With the Greenlight app, kids can learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely, thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun and accessible way. I got Greenlight debit cards for my kids. The greatest thing, you can actually add their photos that take up half the card. So when I handed the cards to the kids, they were like, this is so exciting. So they look great. Unfortunately, I only put the required 2 cents on at the beginning to make sure they worked. So the kids were like, well, what should I spend my 2 cents on? Anyway, millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/Zibby. That's greenlight.com/Zibby to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/Zibby.
Is there something like in your life you're trying to escape from in some way? Like all these books and all these stories and the way your brain works is very much like twisting reality and like going off in another direction, right? Or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of escapist in a way.
Right. Well, yeah. What's so interesting is that like, even though the stories that I write and are ostensibly very far removed from reality, they're always very autobiographical. So like a story in the new collection is about a corporate robot. He's a android named Chip, and he finds out after toiling away in his cubicle for 12 years that he's been replaced by a Chip 2.0, which is like a better looking, cooler version of himself, because he wasn't programmed to have a personality or social skills. So this new robot is taking over. So that's one where it's like, you know, on the face of it, it's like science fiction. But what I was really trying to write about is just how it feels to not be super young anymore, and to start to feel like it's, in some ways you're becoming obsolete, which is, I think, something that anybody over 30 can relate to on some level. And so I come at these stories from a pretty emotional, like grounded place, but I always try to find like a metaphor that dramatizes like how it feels to go through something as opposed to how it actually occurred. Because if I were to write about my actual life in a realistic way, people would be bored to tears.
I don't know. You never know. Yeah. Well, so, but what about the fact that I feel like it's harder to really get a collection of short stories out there, right? The market for them, so to speak, is much tougher than selling fiction or like a full-length novel or something like that. And to have that be your preferred genre, I was just talking to somebody who writes poetry and she's like, yeah, you know, this is just it. Like I, you know, it's been like this my whole life, but I'm a poet. I like to write poetry. And so,
yeah, to, you know, it's a weird thing to devote your life to, sort of short fiction, but I love it. Yeah. I've always wanted to do it. I feel really lucky to get a chance to do it. And yeah, I'm just really grateful. I get to write them.
What are you working on now?
More of the same, more stories. Yeah. I've written now 8 books, I guess. 1, 2, 3. And 6 of them are short story collections. I have published a couple of novels, but I really prefer the short stories. And what I love about them is you can just take enormous swings and you can really take risks that you can't always in a 300 page novel. I wrote a story in New Teeth that's from the perspective of a antique laserdisc machine. And I feel like if it were 300 pages long, it would start to overstay its welcome and people would get pretty sick of the narrator. But at 12 pages, a reader might be patient enough to go with you on like such a weird journey. And that's what I love about short stories is you can really just go full tilt. You can, you know, sprint as opposed to jog.
And when you write them, do you write them all at once or does it take you a couple of weeks? Like what's the normal length of time to write a story for you?
Yeah, it takes like a couple of weeks. I outline them. You know, I have a lot of premises that I write down, and then I have to kind of outline them to see if they have legs. You know, if they're because some of the premises I come up with are they might make me laugh, but they're more like sketch comedy. They don't have like a story potential. The character isn't strong enough, and it doesn't really suggest like a narrative. And those I abandon. And then once I'm outlining it, I'm always trying to figure out, like, is there a way for it to have a happy ending of some kind? A lot of my premises are rooted in, like, you know, some disaster, nightmare scenario. And so it's always like, is there a way to kind of have this character learn something or make some connection or realization by the end that makes us feel like happy that we have read about this character's plight as opposed to just like depressed and cynical.
Yeah. Hand me the next book that will make me feel even more depressed than I was.
I know. Yeah. When you're reading a collection of short comedic stories, you know, you don't want any of them to like bum you out.
So you've done so much already and you're still like so young, not to say that. I mean, you can't be, I mean, I don't even, how old are you? Do you even say that?
37.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah. Happy birthday, I guess.
Thank you.
So what's on your wish list still? Like, do you feel like, I mean, it sounds like you've accomplished your, you know, framed childhood mission of essentially writing for kids or adults who feel like kids on the inside, which is basically all of us. Like what else do you want to do? You've done so much already.
Just more of the same. I mean, it's a boring answer, but I'm always trying to get better. I'm always trying to get sharper with the stories, to dig deeper. And I always try to improve from book to book, and that's kind of it, you know, sort of a boring answer, but yeah, no, I love writing short fiction. I want to keep doing it until they tell me to stop.
So can you tell me like a little preview of like whatever it is you're working on? Like, let's say we turn off the Zoom and you go back to life and everything. Sure. What world are you in today?
Writing about animals today. Writing a story about animals in a forest trying to learn moral lessons and coming up against kind of difficult amoral situations and encountering a lot of gray areas. That's the world that I'm writing in this morning. We'll see if it turns into anything.
Love it. It's so cool. It's amazing to think of like all these writers sitting all over, right, with all these different worlds that they're creating and like putting on the page. Like you can envision it like from above, you know, like little fantasy worlds like all over. Never mind. I'm like,
no, I think about that too. I'm always thinking like with my favorite writers, I'm always thinking, I wonder what they are working on right now. The great thing about being a writer of books is that if something doesn't work out, you can just throw it away and nobody will ever see it. That's like what I another thing I really love about it. It's like you have so much freedom because nobody's watching you write. When you're a stand-up comedian, you're out on stage and bombing half the time, and it's incredibly stressful. Whereas if I write a short story and it ends up being boring or unfunny or derivative or depressing, I just leave it on the desktop. Nobody ever sees it. And so that's it's a very like relaxing kind of profession in that way.
hidden failures, you know,
exactly.
Life of a writer.
Yeah, totally. .. Yeah, no, it's great.
So last question, what advice would you give to aspiring authors?
What advice? I mean, I would say the best advice I think that I have is just to really only write the stuff that you would want to read. You know, it's tempting to try to kind of like write something that you think will appeal to some group of people or some demographic or some professor or some critic. And it never really works in my experience. Whenever you try to write something that you don't actually love, other people are not going to love it as a rule. And if you write something that you love, odds are there are other people in the world who will love it too, or at least like it. And maybe it will be a small group, but that's something you can't control. You have to just kind of, for better or for worse, be yourself. And if you keep that as like your North Star, then eventually you'll find some people who have the same taste as you, and they'll come along, hopefully.
I know. I feel like as I've gotten older, I've like come to terms with the fact that like none of my emotions or feelings about anything I consume, content-wise or otherwise, really is that unique. So if I like love something, even if I feel like it's kind of out there or whatever, but like it's making me laugh or I'm loving it, like somebody else is going to feel that way. Like it's not just me.
Well, they always say, somebody told me once, like the best gift to get somebody is not something you think they'll like, but something you think everybody would like. And yeah, it's like when you're writing something, you're like, I don't really like this, but I think other people might.
Right.
You're on the wrong track.
Yeah.
Go back to writing what you love, even if you think other people are going to think it's ridiculous.
I'm rethinking all my recent gifts now at this
point. Oh no.
I know.
I'm sure they're great. I'm sure they're crowd pleasers.
I also like am of this like I can't remember what I've gotten people. I'm like, sure I'm repeating myself, you know, but if people are too nervous to tell me, but I'm like, I'm pretty sure I got you this last year, but I know you're going to love this coffee table book about home design because wow. Who would have loved this?
Great on top. Yeah. They can have a matching set of two. Yeah. Look great.
Exactly. Yeah. You could, I don't know. And then they can give it as a gift. I gave somebody a bottle of wine. I was like, I'm pretty sure you just gave this to me last week when you came over, but here you go.
Oh yeah. Just trading the same bottle of wine around the friend group for years.
Ridiculous. Anyway. Well, Simon, thank you so much. This is really fun. And I'm sorry I couldn't find the actual book as we talked. I like to have it with me, but
all good.
Anyway.
It's white. It's pink.
I know. It's been literally in my purse as I've changed bags. I like to keep them around me, all the books that are coming up. So if I can read like little bits, especially with short stories, it's so great. I could like stop and I'd be like, you know, 20 minutes early to meet somebody and I could be reading a short story. It's perfect. So
yeah right size. Well, thanks right so much size. For having me. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.